So we are holding on Kuf Nun Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah about what exactly you're allowed to plan for on Shabbos and what you're not. So we said, for example, you're not allowed to, we talked about the concept of machshichin ala tchum, where you'd go to the edge of the tchum before Shabbos and wait there until after Shabbos is over in order to do some kind of activity after Shabbos. So we said, basically, if the activity itself is something that's completely usur on Shabbos, for example, hiring workers or bringing home fruit, then you're not allowed to be machshich, you're not allowed to stay by the edge of the tchum for that purpose. Although, as Tosfos pointed out, you could go some distance, you just can't go all the way to the edge of the tchum because then you're making it obvious that you want to do that activity as soon as Shabbos is over. On the other hand, if the activity itself is mutter, so we said, for example, to watch the produce while it's growing, make sure nobody steals it or whatever, then you're allowed to do that because the activity itself is mutter on Shabbos. And once you're doing that, then you're even able to bring home fruit with you. We said actually Shmuel had said in the Gemara a further detail on that. If the activity is something that there is a way for it to be mutter on Shabbos, even if right now in practice it's not, for example, bringing home detached fruit, where if there were mechitzas between you and the fruit, surrounding you and the fruit, then you would be allowed to carry it without having a problem of carrying from one reshus to another, or of tchumen, then you are allowed to be machshich for that purpose. By the same token, he said you're allowed to say to somebody, for example, that I plan to go to a certain city to a certain city tomorrow. Good morning, Ellie. So in the Mishnah, we had Klal Omer Abba Shol, Kol Sha'ani V'cholah. Abba Shol had given a general rule in the Mishnah as follows. Anything that I'm allowed to say on, good morning, Yaakov, anything that I'm allowed to say on Shabbos, I'm allowed to be machshich for on Shabbos, to stay at the edge of the Tchum until Shabbos is over in order to be able to do the thing right after Shabbos. So we have a question, the bottom of Kuf Nun Amud Beis, second line from the bottom. Abba Shol Aheya. Which part of the Tanakhama statement is Abba Shol referring to with his rule about anything that you're allowed to say, you're allowed to be machshich for? Ilema Areshikoi. Is he referring to the Resha, where the Mishnah had said, Ein machshichin ala tchum lisko poilim lahavi peiros? You're not allowed to stay at the edge of the tchum until it gets dark in order to then go hire workers or bring fruit after Shabbos is over. And Abba Shol is referring to that and saying that, so the Tanakhama would be saying it's also, and Abba Shol would be saying a rule laheter. What do you mean? The fact is Abba Shol has to agree with the underlying din that you're not allowed to be machshich on something that you, the fact is you're not allowed to say to do these things on Shabbos. We said earlier in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to tell somebody else to hire workers for you on Shabbos. So in that case, the rule, Abba Shol's rule is backwards. Hai kol shani zakeh mamirosei, rashoi ani b'chashichosei. When he says anything that you're allowed to say, you're allowed to stay over by the tchum until Shabbos gets dark, in that case, it's backwards. It should be kol she'eni zakeh mamirosei, eni rashoi b'chashichosei mibayilei. He should be phrasing it in the negative to fit with what the Tanakhama is saying. Anything that you're not allowed to say on Shabbos, you're not allowed to be machshich for. So you're not allowed to say to somebody, I want to hire you after Shabbos, or I want you to hire workers for me after Shabbos. Therefore, you're not allowed to be machshich for it. Why would he be presenting it in the positive way? Where after all, if he's trying to summarize what the Tanakhama is saying, that he should use, the Tanakhama is telling us something that's usur, he should also be telling us a rule that's usur. Ela a sefer koi. So you're going to say that Abba Shol is referring to the sefer, where we continue to the Mishnah of a machshichu lishmer or maybe peiros biyadei. We said you are allowed to stay at the tchum until it gets dark, in order where you're going, in order to watch your produce to make sure nobody's stealing it or whatever. Because again, that's an activity which itself is mutter on Shabbos. And we said maybe peiros biyadei, and you're allowed to bring fruit home with you once you do that, because once you went for a purpose which is mutter, then you're also allowed to bring home fruit with you. If that's what Abba Shol means, still, it should be the other way around. The second part of the Mishnah doesn't say anything about what you're allowed to say to somebody. Now, fine, implicitly, if you're allowed to watch the fruit, then implicitly, Bapashtus, you're allowed to ask somebody else to do it for you. But the fact is, the Mishnah doesn't say that. So how is Abba Shaul giving us a rule that doesn't even refer to something that's explicitly there in the Mishnah? It's called Toli Tanya B'Deloi Tanya. You're taking what it says explicitly in the Mishnah about what you're allowed and not allowed to do and making it depend on something that it didn't explicitly say, namely about whether you're allowed to say it or not. How do you make a rule like that? Now, Tosfos points out, if we said it went on the Reisha, then fine. In the Reisha, we did mention, besides that we mentioned earlier when we said that you're not allowed to be machshich in order to hire workers or bring fruit. So we said earlier in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to tell somebody else to hire workers. So we see that there's speaking associated with that. But if we're talking about the Sefer, the heter to go and watch your produce, and meanwhile, while you're at it, once you're there, you're allowed to bring food home, it never said anything about speaking over there. So how is Abba Shaul giving us a rule that involves, that tells us about speaking? So the answer is La'olam HaSefer. Actually, after all, Abba Shaul is referring to the Sefer. The Abba Shaul, so you're wondering then, in that case, what about this Toli Tanya B'Deloi Tanya? That what it is for Abba Shaul Ahokoi. Abba Shaul is actually referring to the following statement, which is implicit in the Mishnah, but not explicit. The Tana didn't mention it, this din explicitly, because the Tana Kama considers it obvious and he didn't need to say it. But Abba Shaul is referring to that. Namely, the Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mutar la'adam lo'im la'chaverish shmurli peres shebetchumcha va'ani eshmer l'cha peres shebetchumi. A person is allowed to tell another person, another yid, on Shabbos, you watch the fruit that's in your tchum, and I'll watch the fruit that's in my tchum. Now we know, of course, two people don't necessarily have to have the same tchum, because one of them could have put down an eid of chatzeres before an eid of tchumen rather before Shabbos, and the other one didn't. So let's say, for example, that you could have my orchard or my whatever that has fruit in it is east of the city, whereas I had previously before Shabbos put down an eid of tchumen so that I can walk a certain distance west of the city, which means now I can't walk all the way to the east to where that orchard is. Meanwhile, though, my friend has an orchard. Meanwhile, my friend is able to walk to that one. I, on the other hand, am able to walk further to the east to one where his is, because I put down an eid of tchumen in his direction, and he can't. So we're allowed to tell each other. You watch for me the fruit that's in your tchum, and I'll watch the fruit that's in mine. So you're allowed to because even though neither one of them can go do his own. But on the other hand, it is zakai ba'amirosoi because it's something you're allowed to say because the other person is allowed to do it. So therefore, v'ka'omer Abba Shaul l'Tanakama. So now Abba Shaul is giving his rule and saying to the Tanakama, mi loy moedis mutter adam loy melachaveres shmerli peres shvetchumcha va'ani eshmelach peres shvetchumi. Don't you agree with that basic concept that I would be allowed to tell you to watch the fruit that's in your tchum and vice versa? The Ema, so if Tanakama, if you agree with that rule, then we can reformulate your rule as follows. Then we can make a rule. If I'm allowed to say it, then I'm allowed to be machshich. Because, in other words, so you, Tanakama, are mentioning, for example, that you're allowed to go and watch your fruit, but you also agree that there would be a scenario where you yourself can't watch it, but somebody else could, because it's within his Tchum Shabbos, and that you're allowed to tell him. So in that case, why Tanakama? So why just mention the specific case that you're allowed to watch your fruit, when you could say it more generally that since you're allowed to tell him to watch your fruit, then you're also able to be machshich for it. So it would be a broader rule. Now, Rashi mentions then in that case, the next Mishnah, which we're going to have further on the Omud, which mentions therefore that you're allowed to, the Mishnah mentions various things that you're allowed to be machshich al atchum. We touched on it yesterday to prepare things for a kala or for a mess. So we said those things are allowed because they're chefzei shemayim, they're needs for a mitzvah. Rashi says, based on what we're saying over here, only Abba Shaul would be saying this. The Chachamim, in fact, would disagree because they say the fact is, and we're talking about activities that you yourself can't do on Shabbos, because we're talking about, as we said yesterday in the Gemara, cutting hadasim for the kala, or cutting or making or whatever tachrichim for the mess. So therefore, the Tanakama would say, so you can't be so. Um, so 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 the Tanakhama would say, so you're not able to do those things on Shabbos, therefore you're not allowed to be machshich on them. Whereas Abba Shaul would say, no, it's not a question of whether you can do them, it's a question of can you give somebody instructions on Shabbos to do them. And you can, because we said chefzei shemayim mutarim. So therefore, Abba Shaul would say, therefore, that you're allowed to be machshich for them as well. So the next mishnah would be only according to Abba Shaul. And the Meiri, on the other hand, says that maybe the Tanakhama and Abba Shaul are not really arguing. Maybe Abba Shaul is just giving the rule in a clearer way, but the Tanakhama would agree with the concept also. And in that case, then the next Mishnah could be according to everybody.
One question.
Yeah.
Can you say, watch my trees in your tchum, and I'll watch your trees in my tchum?
That's exactly what we're saying. You can do that. You can say, you watch my trees that are in your tchum. And I'll watch your trees that are in your tchum, yeah. I mean, I'll watch your trees that are in my tchum, yeah. That's exactly what the Gemara is saying. You're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said watch your trees in your tchum.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. You can say, we have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is only allowed to go a certain distance east of the city, but as we're going to learn in Erevin, when you put down an Erev Tchumen, you shift your tchum, so now he loses out space in the west. What he gains in the east, he loses in the west. Because you can choose a side before Shabbos where you're going to put your Erev Tchumen. But then what it is your Erev Tchumen, without an Erev Tchumen, you have 2,000 amas outside the city in every direction. If you put down an Erev Tchumen in a certain direction outside the city, what you accomplish is you can walk further in that direction. But you're shifting your Tchum. You're now making the center of your Tchum is where you made your Erev Tchumen. So if,
I
let's
understand
say,
that.
Hold on a second. I'm explaining to Ellie as well. So in other words, for example, if I put down an Erev Tchumen 2,000 amos east of the city, what happens is I'm now able to walk 4,000 amos in that direction, but I'm not allowed to walk outside the city to the west at all. I have no Tchum over there. So now you can have, let's say, I put down an Erev Tchumen to the east. You didn't put down an Erev Tchumen at all, or you put down to the west. So now you're able to walk a certain distance west of the city, which I'm not, but I'm able to walk 4,000 amas east of the city, which you're not, and we're able to say, I can tell you, so we can make a deal between ourselves. I'll watch yours, you watch mine. Right. Yeah.
No, initially you said, watch your trees and your tchum and watch, and I'll watch my trees.
In that case, I misspoke. What I meant is Shmurli Peiris, you watch for me the Paris that are in your tchum, and I will watch for you the Paris in my tchum. Yeah.
Who do they belong to, these Paris?
Who do they belong to? Reuven's Paris belong to Reuven, Shimon's Paris belong to Shimon. But Reuven can tell Shimon, you watch the ones that belong to me, which happen to be in your tchum, and I will watch the ones for you, which happen to be in my tchum. That's exactly okay. What we're saying. Yeah.
Okay.
Tosfos mentions in this connection then, by this logic, therefore, you're allowed to we touched on this yesterday. If somebody else, for example, has not accepted Shabbos yet, and you have, you would be allowed to tell him to do some malacha for you on the same basis, because he's still allowed to do that malacha. Therefore, you would be allowed to have him do that malacha for you. The Alter Rebbe has in Shulchan Aruch a very, very long Kuntra Sacharin dealing with all the lunders and all the details behind that, why it's allowed. And partially it's based on also what we learned yesterday, that Shmuel had said that if there's a way that the thing can be done in a way that's mutter, then you're allowed to say it. And in this case, there's a way that's allowed to be that it's mutter, because it's still mutter for the other guy. He hasn't accepted Shabbos yet. So it's not considered shlucha shaladim kamoise because that's the Alter Rebbe deals with that point over there. But the fact is, we're saying so the Alter Rebbe discusses the pros and cons. Is it really mutter or not? But in the end, it is actually okay.
Fine. If the part of the trum is elishus ayachid, can Reuven?
We're going to learn about Tchumen and Erevin, Bez Hashem. So let's not get too much into it now, because though it's quite complicated and we have ground to cover. But when part of the Tchum is inside the city, we'll get to that in Masechet Erevin, Bez Hashem. Okay. So the Gemara says Lasuyimai, Klal Lasuyimai. Okay. So Abba Shaul is saying a rule. Now, what exactly when he says Kol Shani Zakeh Bamirosei must be including something that we haven't said yet? What is that? So the answer is La'asuyah ha'detanan abban, and it comes to include this that we learn in a b'raisa, Ein machshichin ala tchum lahovi behema. You're not allowed to be machshich ala tchum to bring home an animal. So you have an animal of yours that's outside the tchum. You're not allowed to wait by the tchum until after Shabbos in order to bring it, because you can't bring it from outside the tchum. First of all, the animal itself is mukta anyway, but besides that, if it's outside the tchum, you're not allowed to bring it in, because you're not allowed to go outside the tchum on Shabbos. No, the behemoth walked by itself outside the tchum. So we're talking about if it's outside your tchum. The animal, the din is, I mean, the animal, obviously, you can't prevent it. The animal is physically capable of walking wherever it wants. But objects that belong to a person have the same tchum as the person. So if I have, for example, before Shabbos, I didn't make an Erev Tchumen, let's say, and my tchum is 2,000 amos every direction outside the city. So if the animal goes 2,010 amos outside the city, then I can't go there and get it. And I anyway can't pick it up because it would be mukta. So I'm not allowed to do machshich for that purpose. On the other hand, hoisa emedes chutz l'tchum, but if the animal is standing outside the tchum, koder lo v'hibo, you're allowed to call the animal and it'll come by itself because you're not actually moving it, you're not picking it up, and you're not going outside the tchum, so therefore that would be allowed. You're causing it to move, so it's klal omer, abashol. So abashol says in this connection, his rule that he says in the Mishnah, kol shani zakei b'amirosei, anything that you're allowed to say, then you're allowed to be machshich for it. And that includes machshichin lefakeach al iske kala val iske ames. So that includes, as we're going to say in the next Mishnah, that you're allowed to stay. You're allowed to stay by the edge of the tchum in order to deal with iske kala and with iske kala and iske mes. Again, Rashi had said that was only according to Abashol. Rashi had said only Abashol would hold of that, because the fact is we're talking about activities that themselves are also on Shabbos. We're talking about, the question is whether you're allowed to be machshech al tchum. Abashol would say because you're allowed to tell somebody else to do them on Shabbos, because cheftzei shemayim mutarim, therefore you're allowed to be machshech. The Tanakama would not necessarily agree with that rule. Because there you're not saying to anybody else. There you're only calling to the animal to come. It's your animal after all. Yeah. So machshichin lefakeach al iske kalav al iske mes lahovi loy orim tachrichin, to bring an orim tachrichin for the mess, for example, which actually we said yesterday, according to Shmuel's rule, you'd be allowed to anyway, because there is a way in which it would be mutter to bring them on Shabbos if they're already ready-made. Suppose that there were walls, suppose that there were mechitzas, you'd be allowed to carry it, so therefore it's allowed anyway. That's the point. If there are walls, then there's no issue of tchum either, because anything that's within the walls is considered like four amas. So that's the thing. So we're mentioning Orem Tachrichim, right? In other words, so according to Shmuel's rule, we don't even need that. According to Shmuel's rule, we would say we're talking about not only when you're bringing an Orem Tachrichim, we're talking about even, let's say, if you're talking about you have to go to the Tchum in order to make an Orem, in order to make Tachrichim. So to make them themselves, you can't make them on Shabbos, but you're allowed to go there in order to get ready for it. And according to Abashol, you would also be allowed to say to somebody to do it, because Cheftzei Shemayim. You're allowed to tell somebody, go to such and such a place to find the Orem Tachrichin. If you're not able to find it in this place, then go get it from some other place. If you can't find it for a money, if nobody's willing to sell it for a money, then buy it for two monies. If you can't buy it for 100 zuz, then buy it for 200 zuz. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ovovad Shalayaskul, Eschum Mekach. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can't mention a schum mekach, you can't mention an actual amount. So you can't mention 100 or 200, like the Tanakhama says, even for Orem Tachrichin. Even though it's Chefshe Shemayim, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda learns, you're allowed to tell somebody on Shabbos, go, and immediately after Shabbos, I need you to go and get an Orem Tachrichin, such and such a place, but you can't tell them a price. Now that's according to Rashi. The Rambam, on the other hand, learns, the Rambam brings both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Huda, implying that they're not really arguing. The Rambam learns, schum mekach means you're not allowed to tell him a maximum price. You can tell him, buy it for 100. If you can't find for 100, buy for 200. You're not allowed to tell him, don't go above 250, let's say. Why not? The Magid Mishnah there gives a couple of reasons, one of them being because that's not necessary for Tzorech Shabbos, because that's just, you want to save money. Fine, that's not a valid reason to be able to tell, to give instructions to do business on Shabbos. So to... Well, maybe it's stuck of money, maybe not. But the fact is that you could tell him, go, you know, I expect it should go for such and such a price. And you can tell him that price, but you can't tell him don't go above such and such a price. Just like you can't save your valuables on Shabbos, so here it would also be, all it would be is you're doing it in order to save money, and you can't do that on Shabbos, right? That's one reason the Magen Mishnah gives. Another reason is because if you tell him a maximum price, what's going to happen if the price ends up going above that? It's going to come out, he can't get it at all. Then it comes out, you gave him instructions that were useless on Shabbos, and it comes out, you talked about business, which didn't have a use. It didn't end up being for Chefzei Shemayim. All right. Mishnah says, "Machshichen al tchum," so you're allowed to stay until dark by the tchum. Right. So maybe you're talking when people do auctions or whatever for mitzvahs or whatever, all you're allowed to go to a maximum price. I mean, there you have, you know, whatever the price is that they say is what they're going to end up paying. So it's not really fixing a maximum price. If a person were to say, if they were to say at the beginning of the auction, we're not going to go above such and such a price, maybe taka, that would be a problem. I don't know. But... So if you tell him before Yom Tov, then fine. You're telling him before Yom Tov. We're talking about giving instructions on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Yeah. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, "Machshichen al tchum lefakeach al iske kalav al iske ames." You're allowed to stay over by the tchum to take care of matters involving a kala or matters involving a mess. As we said, in the case of the kala, for example, to cut hadasim for her chuppah. In the case of a mess, lahavi lo orim tachrichim, to bring him an oren and tachrichim. And again, as we said yesterday, it might not just be to bring them, because that would actually be that there's not as much of a chiddush in. But even if you need to make the oren or make the tachrichim, you can't make it on Shabbos, but you can plan on Shabbos to do it, because it's chefzei shemayim. Continues the Mishnah on this topic of mesim and preparing for the funeral. Nachri shehevi chalilin b'Shabbos. If a goy brings flutes on Shabbos, they used to play flutes by a funeral because the flutes have a very mournful sound to them, and it helps make people sad, and it helps establish the mood by the funeral. So he brought it on Shabbos. Lo yisbud behen Yisrael. A yid is not allowed to use them for the mourning. Rashi learns that this means forever. The yid is never allowed to use them. It's a knas because since they only bring chalilin for the mess, then it shows that the goy did it davka for the mess. So according to Rashi, it means that the yid for whom it was brought, you're never allowed to use. You'd be allowed, even according to Rashi, you'd be allowed to use them for another yid's funeral, but not for this one. In other words, the point is, you could have the funeral could take place right away after Shabbos, versus it could take place b'chadei she'asu. You could wait a certain amount of time after Shabbos until there was enough time that the goy could have brought them from wherever. Hello, Jacob. From wherever he came from. So, in other words, the idea, according to Rashi, what we're saying is whether the funeral is taking place right after Shabbos, or whether it's taking place later that night or the next day or whatever, you would never be allowed to use these flutes for that yid. You would be allowed to use them for another yid b'chadei she'asu. Many other Rishonim disagree with Rashi on that, starting with Tosfos, that it means you're not allowed to use them. It means you're not allowed to use them for that Yisrael b'chadei she'asu. Okay. Elim Ken Boom Mimakim Korev, unless those flutes were brought from a nearby place, meaning within the Tum. So then there was no Chilul Shabbos involved. Now Tosfos asked the question. Still, the guy brought them through Rosh Hashanah Abim. How does that help? Tosfos answers, because bringing them through Rosh Hashanah Abim, it's not really accomplishing that much. Bringing it from outside the Tum, where it was way outside the city, he accomplished a lot by bringing them from outside the Tum, as opposed to if they're in the city itself and he's just bringing them through Rosh Hashanah Abim, it's not that big an accomplishment that we should say that we should cancel and say therefore you can't use it. Again, Tum and Adrabanan, but Rosh Hashanah is Daraisa, but still, if it's in the city, Tosfos learns that there's not as big a deal with it. On the other hand, many Rishonim disagree, maybe partly on that basis, and therefore they learn that actually, yes, if the guy brought them through Rosh Hashanah Abim, you would have the same problem. Only if he brought them through a Carmelist, then we're saying that as long as they were within the Tchum and he only brought them through a Carmelist, then fine, you could use them right away. He's bringing it, not that it necessarily that a Yid asked him to, but whether if a yid asked him is another matter. But the point is, Rashi says, these chalilim are only used for a mess. So therefore, we know, obviously, that he brought them for a yid. And then specifically for this specific year, maybe. So therefore we're making a knas. So again, Rashi learned that it's because of knas, other Rishonim learn. The truth is actually almost everything we're going to learn in this Mishnah and the Gemara on it, there's a machlokas Rishonim on how to learn it exactly. But one way of looking at it is not so much a knas, it's more it's because it's a gnai. It's a shameful thing for a yid that they should be using for his funeral something that was brought with Chilul Shabbos. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Also, like Aron v'chofer like kever, if they made for him a coffin or they dug a kever. So Rashi learns what we mean is it doesn't mean loy, doesn't mean for the yid. It means the guy made for himself or in order to sell. He made an Aron or he dug a grave. You cover by Yisrael. Then you even if he did it on Shabbos, you're allowed to bury a yid there because the guy did it for himself. And we learned earlier in the Masechta that if the goy does the malacha for himself, you're allowed to have enough from it. The imbish for Yisrael, but if it was made for the sake of Yisrael, lo yikover by Elamis, then that Yisrael is never allowed to be buried in there. Same idea, Rashi would say it's because of Knas, and other Rishonim would say it's because of Gnat. A slave is different. If he's doing, if a Yid's Eved Knani is not allowed to do malacha for him on Shabbos, period. He's considered like his master. We're talking about an unrelated guy who made, let's say, dug a grave where he intends to be buried there one day, or he intends to sell it to somebody else. So now a Yid is allowed to be buried in there, even though he dug it on Shabbos. Right, but so if they're hired, if you hire them, that's different. The truth is actually they're hired by the cemetery, but the truth is actually it does get a little bit complicated. We learned about this a little bit earlier in the Masechta about dinim, where you hire a goy to do before Shabbos to do a certain job for you, and there's a different part. There's a lot of differences. There's a difference: is he a contractor or is he being paid by the hour? There's a difference: is he doing it on your property? There's a whole bunch of complex dinim in there early in Hilchos Shabbos and Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. My mimakim korev. What do we mean? We say that if the flutes were brought mimakim korev, then it's allowed. Rav omer mimakim korev mamish. Rav says it literally has to be from a nearby place. We have to know that it was nearby, meaning we have to see that before Shabbos the flutes were in his house inside the city, and then you're allowed to use them right away matzah Shabbos. Or Shmuel omer chayshin and shemachutz l'chaim alonu. Shmuel says, we can assume that maybe they were in a house right outside the wall, meaning, in other words, that we don't have to know, even if he brought them from outside the city, we can assume that they might have been brought to his house outside the wall before Shabbos, and then on Shabbos, you only have to bring them from outside the wall into the wall, and therefore there was no issue of tchumen. Now, usually the word chayshinan means that we're choshish l'chumra, but Rashi over here learns that it means l'kula. That sometimes, yeah, there's a few places in Shas where we have a word chayshinan where it can mean lakula. So Shmuel, therefore, would be makel against Rab and say we don't have to know for a fact that it was in the city before Shabbos. It's good enough as long as we have reason to think it might have been in a house right outside the wall when Shabbos came in. On the other hand, the Rif and a number of other Rishonim learn that chayshinan over here means as it usually does, it's lachumra. So it comes out, according to them, that Shmuel was being machmir on Rab. Rav would say it's good enough if we know, as long as we know that it was someplace Makom Karev, that's good enough. Whereas Shmuel would say that we have to know for a fact that it was inside the city before Shabbos, because otherwise it might have been brought from outside the Tchum after Shabbos began, and then just he brought it to his house, and now in the morning he's bringing it into the city, and therefore traveled outside the Tchum on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Deka masnisin kavasei de Shmuel." The words of our Mishnah seem to be more precise according to Shmuel. Dekatani also like Aaron, Rechafa like Kever, you cover by Yisrael. We said that if the goy made an Aaron or dug a grave, you cover by Yisrael. Yisrael is allowed to be buried in it. Alma misfeka shari. So we see that even if there's a suffix, you don't know whether the goy made it for a yid or not. Nevertheless, you're allowed to do it. So therefore, halchanami misfeik ashari. So the same thing, Shmuel is saying that even since there's only a suffix, whether it was brought from outside the tchum, then you would be allowed to use it. So we see the Mishnah works out better according to Shmuel. On the other hand, b'tanya or b'tnan kavasei d'rab. On the other hand, we have a Mishnah in Masechta Machshirin that goes like Rav. Namely, the Mishnah says, Irshi Yisraelim v'nochrim dorimba, if you have a city where there were Jews and Goyim living there, v'hoysev ha-merchot ha-marchetes b'Shabbos, in that city you have a bathhouse that operates on Shabbos. So now, on Shabbos itself, we learned before, you're not allowed to go and bathe in it. But are you allowed to go and bathe in it right away, Motzei Shabbos, or do you have to wait v'chdeshi also, the time it's going to take to heat up the water and whatever, yeah. So im roiv nochrim, if most of the people in town are goyim, la erev roichetz b'miyad, then you're allowed to bathe in it right away Motzei Shabbos, because we assume they heated it up for the goyim. Im roiv yisrael yamten ad kadesh yicham ucham, and if most of the people in town are Jews, then you have to wait until enough time to heat up hot water. And mechza al mechza osur, if it's exactly half Jews and half Goyim, it's also osur because of the suffix, whether they did it for the Jews or for the Goyim. The yamten ad kadeshi chamu chamen, so you have to wait until the amount of time it takes to heat up water. Now, Rashi points out, at least over here, we're saying eventually you will be allowed to use the bathhouse. In the case of the Mishnah, we're saying that if the Goy brought the flutes from out, and we know he brought them from outside the Tchum, you're never allowed to use them. What's the difference? The difference is, Rashi says over there, at least there is reason to think. The fact is, there are Goyim in town. Even if most of the people in town are Jews, the fact is, there are Goyim who use the bathhouse as well. Ultimately, they do heat up the bathhouse for them as well. It is mostly heated up for most of the customers. Therefore, you have to wait for Chedesh Yosu. The flutes are being brought only for Jews. No, that has nothing to do. The fact that it could be lukewarm from the last heating, no, that has nothing to do. No, because the fact is you're heating it up on Shabbos. But yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ba'ambati Ktana, Rabbi Yehuda says actually it depends. If there's a small tub there, like a one-person tub in that bathhouse, Im Yeshba Roshus, if you have in that town Roshus, which means like a government minister or something, we're going to see in a second what that is. Roshus is like when it says in Pirkei Avos, Va'al Tisvada La Roshus, that it means the same kind of thing, like don't get too friendly with the government. So that's you have the word Rishus and you have the word Roshus, they're two different things. Anyway, so if there's Roshus in this town, Roichetz Bamiyad, then a Yid is allowed to bathe in it right away, because then we can say they it's likely that they heated it up after Shabbos for that goy, and therefore you'd be allowed to bathe in it right away without waiting b'chdeshi also. No, so we're talking about if the goy lives in town, then we can assume that when they heat up the bathhouse. So one second, the Gemara is going to say my roshus. So what kind of roshus are we talking about? Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Yitzchak, Breder of Yehuda, im yesh ba'odim choshev. It means if there's an important person in town, she yesh le asora avodim shemchamin lo yud kumkumin b'vasachas. So he has 10 slaves, and each one is able right away to start heating up 10 pots of water. So that right away, in a very short amount of time, you're going to have enough hot water to fill up this bathtub. Then, so then you'd be allowed to bathe right away in this small tub, because then we could assume like this: if he doesn't have that many slaves or that many kettles or whatever, it's going to take time to after Shabbos to heat up water. Then there's a real concern that the water was heated up on Shabbos, and then you don't have a heter, because even if they did it for the goy, maybe. But on the other hand, the fact is most of the people in town are Jews. But if you have this important goy in town, but he has all these avodim and everything, so they're able to heat up water very quickly on Motzei Shabbos, then you can go based on that, and then you're allowed to bathe. Then you're allowed to bathe in that tub right away. Since there's so many slaves and so many kettles and whatever, they could heat up the water really quickly. So it would still take a small amount of time. You can't go in the second Shabbos is over, but you'd much less time than you would have to b'chdeshi also, where usually it takes hours to heat up a bathhouse. Now that's the point. There's a likelihood that they did it after Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, but on the other hand, that wouldn't be enough, because the fact is you have most of the people in town are Jews. So not necessarily did they do it for the goy. But when you have that there's a certain number of goyim in town, and number two, that you have this guy with his lots of slaves and whatever, then that gives you a heter to bathe in the small tub. It still wouldn't give you a heter to bathe in the rest of the bathhouse until b'chadesh yosu, because the likelihood is the rest of the bathhouse, they heat it up for the Jews. But yeah. So that's the point. In other words, so Well, the reason why we say in general that such things are also b'chdeshi also, one idea of it is this way you don't come to tell the goy to do it on Shabbos and figure I'm going to gain from that. That way I don't have to wait as long after Shabbos. So the Chachamim penalized him by saying you have to wait b'chdeshi also. That way you have nothing to gain from it. So that way you're not going to tell the goy to do it for you on Shabbos, because either way you're going to have to wait X amount of time after Shabbos before you can do it. Okay. So the point is that now that Mishnah seems to fit better according to Rav, because we see that if it's exactly half Jews and half Goyim, then you're not allowed to bathe in it. But also, meaning that if there's a suffix, it's also, which fits with what Rav was saying, that if there's a suffix, whether these flutes were outside the city before Shabbos, then you can't use them on Shabbos. As opposed to Shmuel was saying, as long as we, again, according to Rashi, that Shmuel is Mekel, then you're saying, as long as there's a reasonable supposition that they were in the house right outside the wall before Shabbos, then you're okay. So that Mishnah wouldn't work out so well according to Shmuel. On the other hand, our Mishnah works better according to Shmuel, because our Mishnah says that only that our Mishnah says that in the case where the goy made for himself an oren or a kaver, then you're allowed to bury a yid in it, even if we don't know for sure whether he made it for a yid or not. So we see it's allowed misafik. Again, given that you have the different explanation of the Rishonim, that Rav is Mekel and Shmuel is Machmer, then that would also require a different Girsa in the Gemara over here, which they bring. Well, that's a special case. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's a special case, because there you have kind of a sfek sfek over there. Number one, they might have done it after Shabbos, and even if they did it on Shabbos, they may have done it for the Goy. So that kind of thing would be multiple. When you only have one suffix, then that Mishnah seems to be implying that not. Maybe, but it doesn't really matter. Yeah, it doesn't really matter whether you have to pay a little extra to use that term. The fact that you have Roshus, the fact that you have this rich guy. Yeah. All right, let's go on. Also, like Oren v'chofer like kever, we said if the goy made an Oren or a kever, then we said you're allowed to bury a yid in it. But if he made it for a yid, then you're never allowed to bury. Again, according to Rashi, you'd never be allowed to bury that yid in it. Actually, everybody agrees, because here it says Olamis. That's Tosfos mentions that when Rashi had learned that in the case of the flutes, also you can never use them for the yid, then why didn't it say Olamis over there? So that's one of Tosfos's proofs against Rashi. Because over there we're saying, there we didn't say that the flutes can never be used olamis, we just said lo yisped bam Yisrael. Rashi learned that it meant you can never use them for that Yisrael. But Tosfos disagrees and just says it means even for that Yisrael, you would have to wait b'chdeshi also. So if you know that the flutes are made someplace 3 hours away, then you can't use them until 3 hours after Shabbos is over. Okay. So the question is, why are you not allowed, why would you never be allowed to use that Oron or Kaver if he made it for a Yid? Same idea, Yamtin B'chdeshi Yosu, all you should have to do is wait B'chdeshi Yosu. So fine, it takes 3 hours to dig a grave, so you can't bury the Yid until three hours have passed from Shabbos. Why are we saying you can never bury the Yid in it? The answer is, because the case is, we're talking about the Kaver is on a main road, according to Rashi, the question is on the Reisha. Why are we saying you cover Bo Yisrael, implying that you can bury the Yid in it right away? Shouldn't you have to wait B'chdeshi Yosu in case he made it for a Yid? And the answer is because it's talking about it standing on the grave is by an Isratia, is by a main road. Jews don't usually bury in such places. Therefore, the likelihood is that the guy made it for himself. No, but not necessarily by his house. We're talking about by a main road. And Isratia is like a highway. You know, you have... Now, nowadays, they don't. But in the olden days, I guess it was somewhat common that you'd bury people next to the highways. So. Okay, let's go on. Whatever. Okay, so therefore, so in other words, therefore, there's no concern that he made it for a yid, because then he wouldn't have dug it in such a place. Okay, tenach kever, fine, that works as far as a kever. Oren ma'iklamem, what about an oren? How are you going to know for a fact that the goy made it for himself? Amar ababo, b'mutal al kivrei. Because the case is, if the Oren is right next to that kever, so he dug a kever next to Rosh Hashanah, and then right next to it he has the Oren as well, so obviously the Oren was meant to go in that kever, therefore it's likely, so even he made it on Shabbos, the likelihood is he made it for himself, because again, a kever like that, in a place like that, Jews don't usually bury in, so the Oren therefore goes together with the kever, and therefore it would be mutter. Again, many other Rishonim learn that the Gemara is saying the other way around. The question is, on the Sefer, where we said that if he made it for a Yid, you're never allowed to bury the Yid in it, the question is, why not? Why wouldn't it be Mutter after B'chdei She'asu? And the answer is, because if the answer is exactly the other way around, according to those Rishonim. If the Kaver is by a main road or by a crossroads or whatever, it's such a big public thing. So therefore, there was a public Chilul Shabbos done in the Goy digging that caver for Yisrael. And therefore, as a matter of Knas or as a matter of Gnai, we never allow the Yid to be buried in there because it would be a Gnai for him that a public Chilul Shabbos was done on his behalf. No, but that's the point. We see that that box was next to the caver, so therefore also, so according to Rashi, the point is, the caver was obviously made for the goy, the box was also obviously made for the goy, therefore now you can instead use them for a yid. According to all the other Rishonim, we're saying the other way around, because it's in public, because the building of the caver and the making of the Arin were done in public on Shabbos, so therefore it would be a gnai for a yid to be buried in such things on Shabbos. Okay. Mabashis is a public place. I mean, there were Jewish cemeteries, but sometimes you can have a Yid could be buried individually in a caver of his own. Eventually, maybe that would become a basic forest, but not necessarily. You're not allowed to bury a Jew next to a Goy, but in this case, not necessarily next to. Yeah, but the Goy dug a grave over here. You're going to use it for a Yid. Then eventually, maybe other Jews are going to be buried there, or maybe you'll fence it off, whatever. What about it? Well, that's how they usually did it in those times, yeah, is they'd collect the bones after the flesh decayed. Yeah, but I don't know. Well, let's bury him here real fast. Maybe let's bury him here temporarily and eventually we'll do it. Could be. All right, let's move on, especially Amud Beis is quite large. Mishnah says, Oisin kol tzorche ames. You're allowed to do all the needs for a mess on Shabbos, meaning to keep him from spoiling. So you're allowed to smear the oil on the body or wash it, or as long as you don't move any limb of the body, because the mess is mukta, so you're not even allowed to move any limb of it. Another din, you would be allowed on Shabbos to pull out the pillow or the mattress from underneath the mess, and have the body fall onto the sand. And the purpose, you would do that, b'shvil sheyamtin, in order that it will delay spoiling. Because what happens is you have it on a bed, you have the heat of the pillows and the blankets and whatever is likely to make the body spoil faster. So what you do is you put it, or you get it onto the sand, which is cooler, and that way the body will stay fresh a little longer. Or another meaning of yamtin is also it'll become moist, because like the sand has a little moisture in it, and that'll help keep the body a little moist and therefore keep it from decaying as fast. So you're allowed to do that. But again, you're not allowed to pick it up off the bed and move it, because you're not allowed to move the mess. The only exception we said before, we learned earlier in the Masechta, if the mess is sitting out in the sun, for example, and there's no way, then you're allowed to move it together with a kick or a tinnik. You're allowed, in that one case, you're allowed to move the mukta item together with something non-mukta. If there's a fire, we said, then you have certain dinim of what you're allowed to do also, right? Okay. Continues the Mishnah, koshrin es alechi, on Shabbos, you're allowed to tie the jaw. So what happens is, a person passes away, their muscles start going slack. So among other things, the mouth starts opening, because like this, when a person is alive, they can keep their mouth closed, but when they die, then it starts opening on its own. You don't want, it's not becover dick for the mess. So you're allowed to tie something, like you tie a ribbon or something around the head and under the jaw. Lo shiyala, you're not allowed to tie it tightly enough to make the jaw close, because again, that would be moving the jaw, and you're not allowed to on Shabbos, we just said. Ela shalo Yosef, but you're allowed to put it just enough that it won't open further. V'chein kodesh nishbara, similarly, if a ceiling beam breaks on Shabbos, same chenoise b'saf, so you're allowed to hold it up on Shabbos but using a bench, so you take a bench and put it on end and put it under the broken beam. Oy ba'aruch, or with the long poles from a bed. Again, lo shatale, you're not allowed to put it tightly enough to make the beam go back into place, for two reasons, by the way. First of all, because then you'd be doing boina, you'd be building, and second of all, because also it's mevato kli mehechonoi, you're making that now the keli remains mukta for the rest of Shabbos, because you can't move it. And that's by you put it over there under the beam. The beam itself is mukta. It's now supporting it over there, and you can't. So therefore, ela shaloi tosif, again, you can put it in such a way that it shouldn't get worse, but not in order to push it back into place. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, what do you mean that you're allowed to wash or anoint the body on Shabbos? V'ha'amr of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, ma'isa b'talmidah shel Rav Meir shenichnas achar l'beis ha'melechus. It happened once a Talmud of Rav Meir followed him into the bathhouse. Now, by the way, usually a Talmud is not allowed to bathe together with his Rebbe. But if his Rebbe needs him, like to help him, then he's allowed. So this Talmud went in. Bikish l'hadiach karka. He wanted to wash the floor. He wanted to wash the floor before a mayor goes in. He told him this was on Shabbos. So now, how is he going to the bathhouse on Shabbos? Either it was a cold bathhouse, or it was Chamei Tveria, which we said the hot springs of Tveria you're allowed. Or we also learned earlier in the Masechta, there was a period when there was no gzera about going into a sweat, into a schwitzbad on Shabbos. The issur was to bathe, but you were allowed to go in there in order to sweat. Eventually, the Chachamim asked that as well. So this could have been that this was during the time when it was still mutul aziyah. Anyway, so the Talmud wanted to wash the floor. Amalei ein madichin, and the mayor said you can't do that on Shabbos. Losuch karka, he wanted to smear oil on the ground. Amalei ein soch, and he tells him you can't do that either. The smearing the oil on the ground would be like one idea is you'd have a marble floor or whatever, you'd smear oil on it and then you'd roll around and like get oil on your skin that way. It was a way of doing things they used to do. Anyway, so he told them you're not allowed to do that. Now there it was a stone floor, because bathhouses don't have dirt floors. They have stone floors or something, and still he's telling him you're not allowed to wash it or to pour oil on it. So why would you be allowed to with a mess? The difference is karka b'karka michlafa, mess b'karka la michlaf, because you could confuse one kind of floor with another. If you're going to be allowed to do it with a stone floor, you might come to do the same thing with a dirt floor, and that would be a malacha of boina on Shabbos, because you're smoothing out holes in the floor. As opposed to a mess is not easily confused with the karka, and therefore you're allowed to wash or smear oil on a mess without concern that people are going to think you can do the same thing with the karka. Okay. We said in the Mishnah kol, we started the Mishnah kol, oisin kol tzorchei ames. So kol lasu yamai, what else are we including with this word kol? So lasu yahod etan rabbanon. Mevian clay maker or clay mattress, you're allowed on Shabbos to bring a keli that will cool things off. For example, Rashi says a glass keli, or clay mattress, or a metal keli, or manichen al kreise, and put it on the stomach of the dead person, kadesh le tefuach, in order that he doesn't swell up. Because like this, again, heat makes the body decay faster. So you put something cool on there in order to keep the body from decaying as fast. So it won't spoil too much by the time Shabbos is over. Also, you're allowed to stop up the holes in the mess's body. For example, you put something in the nostrils and whatever, kadesh le tikanes ben aruach, so air doesn't get in there again, because that's going to make the body decay faster. V'af shloima omer v'chachmaseh, and we find that Shloima HaMelech expressed this idea with his chachma, that you can have a problem where a mess's stomach swells up and explodes. So this is what we're talking about on Shabbos, you want to put something cool on there to keep that from happening. So we see Shloima expresses that idea. The last parak of Kehelas begins with the words "Uschur esber echa b'mei b'churei secha." The Gemara is later on. The Gemara is soon going to darish and psukim one after the other from that parak. It starts off. Shlomo says, "Remember your Creator while you're still young." In other words, the point is Shlomo is telling you, "Don't wait till you're old to do tshuva. Do tshuva while you're still young and strong, before your body starts falling apart and you pass away and whatever, and then it comes out you didn't do tshuva in time." Now, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that a person does Tshuva even the last moment of their life, Hashem still accepts it. But it's still not the best possible kind of Tshuva. The best possible kind is when the person is still strong and still has the ability to do the Aveira, and then he does Tshuva and stops doing it. So therefore, so Shlomo is warning a person to do it. And he gives a whole mushal over there about how the body falls apart. And he uses the expression, Ad shall ad asher lo yerosek chevel akesef. The pasuk goes like this: Ad asher lo yerosek chevel akesef. Before the silver chain snaps, v'soretz gulas hazahav, and the golden bowl shatters. V'sishaver kad al mabua, the pitcher is going to break by the well. V'noretz hagalgal al abur, and the wheel is going to be shattered in the pit. In other words, the metaphor Shlomo is using is: you imagine you have a well, like the old style wells they drew water from. So you have attached on top of the well is a wheel that you have a wheel to turn with the rope. You have the rope over there. One end of the rope has has like a bowl or something as a counterweight, and the other end has at the other end has the pitcher that you go and fill up water. So Shlomo is describing metaphorically how the whole thing falls apart and breaks. So what does it mean? Ad shel yirosek chevel hakesef, when it says before the silver chain snaps, ze chut hashedra, this refers to when a person dies, the chut hashedra breaks, their spinal cord, the soretz gulas hazahav, and the golden bowl shatters, ze ama, this refers to the male aver. It's called gulas hazahav. Gulas means a bowl, like a fountain, because the fountain from which zera comes, from which urine comes and whatever. So before that breaks, when it says the pitcher will break by the will, that refers to the stomach, which splits open after the person dies. The noritz is a perish. And then when it continues, that the wheel will shatter in the pit. That refers to the perish, that refers to the undigested food that's in the stomach. Galgal maloshin golol. The word golol, they're like glolim, means waste, means animal waste, human waste, or whatever. So in other words, that winds up in the burr, meaning that winds up in the burr, in the mouth. And when the stomach explodes and all the contents of it come out, then they fall onto the mess's mouth. So therefore, so to prevent that from happening, to prevent bizarre mess, you want to make sure that the stomach stays cool and doesn't explode before you have a chance to bury the mess. So nowadays, I mean, they do tara on the mess in time, but they clean everything out. No, I mean, they also did, but not necessarily. You're able to clean out the inside so well. Yeah. So, okay. V'chein hu'omer, we see another pasuk that expresses this idea about the perish land, about the perish landing in a person's mouth. The expression is in the Navi, v'zeirisi perish al pneichem perish chageichem. Hashem warns that if you're going to be eating and drinking and not giving tzedakah and whatever, then I'm going to throw perish on your faces, perish chageichem, the perish of your yomim tovim, meaning like the Rambam says, you have, for example, people who they eat and drink and they have a whole suda on yom tov, they don't bother inviting the poor people. So that's the kind of perish chageichem that we're talking about, like the person just deserves to have that thrown back in his face. Hashem doesn't appreciate that kind of yom tov. And Omer of Huna v'Amri lo Omer of Choga, Eilu b'nei Adam shama nichen divrei Torah. This pasuk is also talking about people who abandon learning words of Torah. But Oisin ko yomem chagim, and they act their whole life like it's a yom tov, and they're always eating and drinking, and they never take care of learning Torah. So the word perish, in other words, has a double meaning. It means the waste from the body. It also means v'loshin parash, that he separated himself from learning Torah. So he winds up with perish al pneichem. He winds up such a person after he dies, then the perish explodes out of his stomach and lands on his face, and it's a bazillion for him. That's the point. So since it says perish in the pasuk twice, perish al pneichem, perish chageichem, then we can dash in it, right? Omer of Levi, Omer of Papi, Omer of Yeshua, la'acha shloshi yomim. Specifically, what happens is 3 days after the person passes away, kresi nivkas, his stomach splits open, v'nefelas lay upon him, and the contents of it spill out onto his face, v'omeres lay, and the stomach, in effect, tells the mouth, to mash nasatabi, take back what you stuffed me with. Like, in other words, again, we're talking about a person who spends their whole life stuffing themselves with food, doesn't concern themselves with tzedakah, doesn't concern themselves with Toto, mice, and tovim, or whatever. So eventually the stomach says, listen, you stuffed me up with food all your life, so now you may as well take it back onto your face. Why dafka 3 days? In particular, the Zohar talks about that for the first 3 days, the neshama is hanging around the body. The neshama, like so to speak, doesn't realize the person is dead yet. It still wants to go back into the body. And therefore, only after 3 days do you have the penya. No, it could be that he didn't get buried for 3 days, or it could be we're talking about in the caver itself, the body starts decaying. Yeah. All right. Mishnah says, "Ein ma'atzmin es ames b'Shabbos." On Shabbos, you're not allowed to close the mess's eyes. Now, usually you would want to close the mess's eyes. We find actually all the way back in Torah, Hashem promises Yaakov, "The Yosef Yoshis Yodei Alanecha." Yosef will be the one to put his hands over your eyes. You're supposed to close the eyes of the mess. The Zohar explains the idea is, in particular, when a tzaddik passes away, he sees the Shechina. So then it's not right that after that his eyes should be open to see anything else. So therefore, you're supposed to close them. Yes, he did. And actually, we had in the second parak, we had the whole discussion over there where they had to use a kikurei tinuk to move him. Okay. So you're not allowed to close the eyes of the mess on Shabbos. Again, because we just said you're not allowed to move any aver of the mess because the mess is mukta. V'loy b'choil imitzias nefesh. And also, by the way, on weekdays, you're not allowed to close the eyes as soon as the neshama goes out. You have to wait a little while to make sure the person is actually dead. If a person closes it as soon as the person seems to be dead, then he's shreifik damim, because as the Gemara is going to say, like the person is on the edge of dying, and you just any movement of him could be the last thing that makes him die. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, ha'ma'atzmei mitzias ha'nefesh. If you close the eyes as soon as the nefesh goes out, hareza shefech damim, then it's like you're killing the person. Moshal nefesh shekava vahilachas. It's like a candle that's about to go out. You put one finger on the candle, miyad kovsa, and right away it goes out. And the same thing over here, one little touch of the person might be too much for him at that point. So this is the famous thing that the Chevra Kadishas nowadays, they use, for example, I don't know if they do it still now, but whatever, they use the, for example, they put a feather under the person's nose, or they put a mirror under the person's nose and see if the mirror fogs up or if the feather moves. And if it doesn't, then they know he's not breathing anymore. And then once the person is dead, then they close the eyes. I don't know, yeah. So I don't know, nowadays maybe they use the machines or whatever to maybe they use. I don't know. Well, that's later on, obviously. That's for sure after he's dead. Yeah, later on they tovel the body, or they pour 9 kavman. That's after they know he's dead for sure. The first thing when you have a person where they think he might be dead, but they're not sure, they use a feather, for example. They put a feather under his nose and see if it flutters, then they know he's still breathing. No. So then at that point, the only thing you can touch him is to try to save his life, but not, for example, to close his eyes. Okay. Tanya Reb Shimon Gamliel. If a person wants the eyes of the mess to close, and apparently he doesn't want to close them directly for whatever reason, what you do is, maybe on Shabbos we're talking about, what you do is you blow a little wine into the mess's nostrils, you put a little oil between his eyebrows, and you hold and squeeze his big toes, and then the eyes will close on their own. So maybe this is on Shabbos we're talking about. You can't move any aver of the mess, so you can't close the eyes directly, but you can do these things that indirectly cause it to close. How it works, I have no idea. Okay.
But you can't move.
But you can't move any aver. You can squeeze the toes, right? Tanya, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Tinek ben Yomei Chai Mechalon Alav Shabbos. We see that when you have a baby, even on the day he's born, you're able to be Mechalon Shabbos to save his life. On the other hand, David Melech Yisrael mess ain't mechalon of the Shabbos. But David Melech Yisrael is dead, then you can't do anything. You can't be mechalon Shabbos, as we had earlier in the Masechta, where Shlomo had to ask a Shaila what to do with the body, and they told him you have to use a kikkur, a tinek. The difference is tinek ben yom echai mechalon of the Shabbos, because famous thing, omra Torah chalal of Shabbos echad kadesh sheyishmer Shabbos is habi. Be mechalon one Shabbos for him now, so that in the future he'll be able to be mechalon many. He'll be able to keep many other Shabbos. Now, by the way, that's not the only derivation of how we know that you're mechalal Shabbos to save a person's life. The Gemara in Yuma brings a half dozen other limudim, and that's important because this one would work only if, what if you have, for example, what if you know he's not going to live for very long afterwards? So the reason Kadesh Yishmer Shabbos Habe is not going to apply. What would happen, Rahman al-Atlan, for example, it's a retarded child or something. He's never going to be able to observe Shabbos properly anyway. Would you say you can't be mechalal Shabbos for him? Based on this rule, maybe not. But there are other limudim over there in Yuma that there are other reasons to be mechalal Shabbos for any Yid's life, even if it's only Chayesha, even if he's never going to be normal and is never going to be able to observe Shabbos, etc.
Can you bury someone with the eyes open?
Can you bury with the eyes open, you're asking? You could, but you're not supposed to. The Gemara mentions that in Yuma, that Chayesha is also important. What are you asking for, Moshe?
There's a risk that by waiting 24 hours until Shabbos is over, you won't be able to close the eyes.
Okay, so then if there's that risk. If you can't close the eyes, you can't. Then you do what you can. I mean, you still can't be mechalal Shabbos for that purpose. So if the eyes close after Shabbos, then good. And if not, then it's nothing you can do. Maybe
can you do it with a shinui?
No, Bapashtas not. You can't move Mukta. You can't move Mukta, period. Maybe you could tell a goyish. Maybe you could tell a goyish, a doctor or a nurse or something to do it. I don't know. All right. One interesting thing in this connection, by the way, about this Chalal of Shabbos Habe, you have the famous story in Yuma when Hillel is up on the roof over there and gets snowed on, and then they take him down and they say, Roy Zel Chalal of Shabbos. What do you mean, Roy Zel Chalal of Shabbos? You're Chalal Shabbos for anybody to save his life. So the Tzitz Eliezer has an interesting tshuva where he goes through a few possible answers from various achronim on that. One of them is Shmaya and Avtalion might have held like this opinion over here, that the only reason you able, normally the only reason you're able to mechallel Shabbos for somebody would be Kadesha Yishmer Shabbos is Harbe. But in this case, what if Hillel had been so far gone that he wouldn't have lived for very long? They're saying because he was Moser Nefesh, like that for Torah, for him it would be worthwhile to be mechallel even for Chayesha, whereas for everybody else it would only be if they can observe another Shabbos. Now, the halacha is not like that, but that is one explanation of that Gemara over there. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. On the other hand, David Melech Yisrael mes en mechal en olav. On the other hand, if David Melech Yisrael dies, you can't be mechal Shabbos for him because kiven shem mes adam bottom on a mitzvah. Because once a person dies, he's bottle for mitzvahs. So therefore, he's not going to be able to do mitzvahs anymore. So you can't be mechal Shabbos for him to be able to do any more mitzvahs because he won't be able to. This goes with what Rabbi Yochanan says. When a person, when the pasuk says, "In death there is chafshi, there is freedom," meaning kiven shemes adam nafshi chafshi mina mitzvahs. When a person is dead, he's free from mitzvahs, which has implications in halacha. Not only that we're saying over here you can't be mechal Shabbos for him, but also, for example, you're allowed to bury a mess in kilayim in shatnez, and there's no problem of it. You're allowed to bury him with posel or tzitzis. So yeah. Vatanya, we also learn in a braisa, Reb Shimon Elazar, Tinek ben yomei chai ein sarach l'shomer min acholder o min achborim. Another difference between a live baby and a dead person is a live baby, even on the day he's born, you don't need to protect him from weasels or mice. On a normal basis, they're not going to attack him. Aval oig melech haboshen mes tzarech l'shomer min acholder o min achborim. But you have even oig melech haboshen is dead, and you have to guard him from weasels and mice that are going to try to eat him up. Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Umayrach bechitchem yiyah." The pasuk says, "Your fear and your chita will be on all the animals." Now, the word chita, the Gemara is darshening chitchem. The Gemara is darshening meloshen chayuschem, your life. And again, it's because the word moira already means fear. So, what is chitchem? The symbol meaning of chitchem means fear, but then it's extra. So, therefore, the Gemara is darshening it meloshen chayus. So calls mancha odem chai a mosim telas alabrius. As long as a person is alive, the creatures, the animals fear him because they see his tzelam alekim. Kim and Shemes, Botloy Mase, once he dies, then that fear is gone. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Omar Papa, Naktinon, we have the Kabbalah from Arabeim, Arya Abetre Le Nafil. A lion will not attack two people together. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Hokka Chazin and Nafil. What do you mean? We see sometimes a lion does attack two people together. The answer is, how who could the Rami Bar Abba? That's only because of what Rami Bar Abba says. The Omar Rami Bar Abba, a wild animal will not be able to control and then beat a person unless the person appears to that animal like an animal itself. So he doesn't have his tzelem elokim anymore. Odom bikor bayolin, as the pasuk says, a person stays overnight without honor. Nimshal kabehemus nidmu. He's dominated. Nimshal meloshen memshala, like the behemus. When kabehemus nidmu, when he is similar to the animals. So when he's similar to the animals, then the animals are able to control and dominate. So in other words, so when you have the two people that are being attacked by an animal, it shows they don't have their tzelem elokim, and therefore the animal is not afraid of them anymore. Now, the question is, though, we just said that even one living person is, that animals are afraid of him, so why all of a sudden are we saying over here too? So there's a few different answers. One of them, Ben Yehoyada, says that maybe an animal might go jumping to try and attack one person, but then he realizes the person, it'll stay away, as opposed to if it's two people, it'll see in the first place and not even try. But there is a very interesting explanation that the Ktsois Sachoshin has a very lumdish sefer called Shev Shmeitzer on various complicated sugyas in Gemara. And in the introduction to it, he has a whole introduction on the nefesh and the guf and a person's purpose in this world and whatever. And he mentions this Gemara and he explains the Beit Trei we're talking about is a person within himself has to have two madregas. He has to have Zohar and Nekeva. In particular, he says Zohar is Mashpia, Nekeva is Makabal. The person has to have within himself the Oni and the Osher. He can't just be an Osher and ignore the Oni. He has to have the Oni within him himself. Then when he is, then he's considered Beitre. He's considered two people. So when the Gemara is saying, Aryah Beitre Le'nofel, it means a person who has both of those Madregas. He has the Ashirus and he has the Anirus. He's sensitive to the Oni as well. Then the lion or whatever is not going to attack him. Mashenkin, if he doesn't have that, then he doesn't have it. Salam Alekim, and therefore the lion may attack him. Okay. Omer Rab Chanina, also Lushin Mabayis Yechidi, Rab Chanina says, you're not allowed to sleep alone in a house. B'chola Yoshin, Mabayis Yechidi, Eichaz de Lilis. A person who sleeps alone in a house, Lilis, which is a shed, will grab a hold of him. So one connection is, in other words, that we're saying, the same way as we were just talking about the animals that are able to be in control of a person, it's the same way over here Lilith is able. Now, it's, this halacha is not actually brought in the big Shulchan Aruch. The Alter Rebbe brings it in Hilchas Shmiras, in Hilchas Shmiras Gufa Nefesh, in Choshen Mishpat, though. One thing is, the poskim say, first of all, there's a question, what kind of house alone does it apply to? Does it apply even if there's only one room in the house and the room is and the door is locked? Does it apply only if it's a house by itself? Does it apply only if it's a detached house and there are no houses around it? One thing is also, it says, if there's a light in the room, then there's not an issue. So either what you do is, if you're in a room by yourself, sleeping by yourself, either you keep the door unlocked or you have a light in the room and then you don't have this issue. Either you keep the door unlocked, and then according to some of the poskim, that helps against this. It's only if the door is locked. Or the other possibility, your bedroom, for example. Or the other possibility is you have a light in there. You have a night light or something.
In the case of the...
Now, Shema, not around anymore, but still, the din is brought. The Alter Rebbe still brings it in Hilchos Shmiras Gufa Nefesh. What information?
In the case of the person who is feels just like either a nani or a nashir without feeling the other way around, yeah. So mm-hmm. Are you implying that a person who has, let's say, one midah, like chesed or gvura...
No. We're talking about, in other words, that even the person, even the osher still has to be sensitive to the ani. We're not talking about chesed and gvura and whatever. We're talking about the osher has to feel a sense of chesed and a sense of rachmim towards the ani. And if not, then he's only one person. He's not two people. Like this, the Gemara is saying, a lion won't attack two people. But if he doesn't act like that, I'm an osher, I don't care about the ani, then he's only one person. That's the point the Shev Shmaitzer is making.
Well, that means he's got
that's
one midah in
that's
himself.
Not the same thing. That's not the same thing as having the different midahs of chesed and gvura. All right, let's finish off over here and ask me about that afterwards. Vatanya, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Asei Ad Sha'ata Moitzeh, do tzedakah, while you still find an oni available, v'umotzui loch, and while you still have money available to you, v'oidcha b'yodcha, and while you're still in control, meaning before you die. Or Marashal says, not just before you die, but before you get weak and you're not able to handle your own affairs anymore. V'af Shloima Omer b'chachmaseh, and so we find that Shloima said in his chachma, so now we're going to quote those psukim that we were mentioning before, where Shlomo warns the person to do tshuva while they're still young and strong. He says, remember your creator while you're still young, ad asher lo yavoyu yimei hara, before the bad time comes. And what is the bad times? Elu yimei azikna means the times when a person is old and it's not such good times for them anymore. And the pasuk continues, "V'igiu shanim ashtayim ein lebahem chayfet." The pasuk continues, "Before there come the years when you will say, I have no desire in them." What does that mean? Elu yimei Mashiach she'ein behem lo zchus v'lo chayva. That refers to the times of Mashiach. There's not going to be any zchus or chayva anymore because everybody. Rashi says because everybody's going to be rich then, so there's not going to be anybody to give tzedakah to. So there's not going to be any zchus of whom to give tzedakah to. There's not going to be any chayva because there's not going to be any yetzahara where a person is going to be stingy and I don't want to give tzedakah. So therefore, make sure you give tzedakah now before those times come when there's no schar v'onesh and there's no yetzahara and there's no aniyim and whatever. The Tzemach Tzedek explains actually another why that the Rebbe brings in a mimer. Why we calling you Moshe Mashiach? Yom Hashem Lehem Hashem Ram Chayfetz. I mean, your Moshe Mashiach is the tachlis of our whole world. He says yes, but on the other hand, nowadays when you do mitzvahs, you're able to connect with atzmus of Hashem. The Moshe Mashiach, you have it's a ha'ara. It's a ray of light from Hashem's name. So it's a very powerful one. The Moshe Mashiach, it'll be a much more powerful ha'ara than we have now. But nevertheless, you're not going to have the atzmus of mitzvahs themselves, and because in Mashiach's time, mitzvahs taylus lost in love. We're not going to, as Rashi says over here, you're not going to have a yetzahara. You know, so it's not going to be the same kind of effect. We had it. We had it in Hayom Yom last week, right? We had the when Mashiach comes, we're going to miss the times of galus because we're going to realize how much avodah we could have accomplished that we didn't. And the Gemara, Pliga de Shmuel, the Gemara says, now this statement of Rabbi Shimon Elazar argues with what Shmuel says, that Rabbi Shimon Elazar is saying that in Mashiach's time, there's not going to be any rich people, there's not going to be any poor people, there's not going to be any Eitzahara or whatever. Shmuel disagrees with that. To Amar Shmuel, The only difference between Olam Hazeh and Yemos Mashiach is that we won't be subjugated to the nations anymore. We learned this before. We learned this earlier in our Masechta. We learned this in Brachas. Shenema, ki lo yechdal avin, v'kayr v'aretz, because the Pasuk says there will never be lacking any poor people from the world. So in other words, Shmuel says, even the Yemos Mashiach, there will be poor people. So according to Shmuel, there'll still be the possibility of doing tzedakah when Mashiach comes. So what does this mean exactly? We know there's the two tkufas in Yemos HaMashiach. The Alter Rebbe talks about Nigeres Chofhei in Tanya. The idea brings from the Zohar that only for the Amei Oretz will it be like that. Whereas for the Tamar Chachamim, the Mashiach's times will be a whole different kind of Metzios, etc. Okay, so we'll stop over here and we'll continue with this tomorrow. Be'ez Hashem. So now, Avraham Moshe, you're asking about the Shev Shmaitzer is saying. So yeah, he's not talking about a person has to be a blend of different midas. That's true, but that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about that you have to have within yourself, the Oni to realize, in other words, that the Oni depends on you, and you have to be sensitive to his needs, and then you're considered a Beit Rei. Then you're considered two people together, where then, as the Gemara is saying, that a lion is not going to attack you.
That's exactly a midah of chesed. What else
is
it?
A midah of chesed, but in other words, it's not enough. In other words, there can be the midah of chesed, but there can be beyond that where you actually feel empathy for the other person. Chesed would just be, okay, I'm going to do the guy a favor. This is going beyond that, kind of. But yeah, I mean, there's a relationship, obviously, but it's not exactly the same thing, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Shkeich.
Continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.